Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling, and coming up on today's episode, we'll have a chat with Brittany Furrow, the VP of Sustainable Retailing and Healthy Living at Ahold Delhaize USA. Now, they just this month announced their sustainability goals for the coming year, but we'll talk to Brittany not only about those, but how sustainability and the path to sustainability affects Ahold Delhaize's overall organization. If you're not familiar, again, a grocery chain dominant across the East Coast, and we're very, very happy to be joined by Brittany on the show today. We'll also chat about a couple of recent earnings calls. We'll look ahead to Verizon and Deloitte launching a 5G initiative. And in our news segment, our main news segment, we'll talk about macro level forecasts for the coming year released by NRF. But first, a quick reminder that you can like us and rate us however you access us, whether that be through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and so forth. Those ratings, if you enjoy us, help others to find and locate our show and kind of check out a retail centric podcast, if you will. Additionally, you can check us out on social media at Retail Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. So let's kick it off in our news segment. And again, we haven't discussed macro level forecasts much of late, especially after the holiday forecast season, but that changes this week as NRF was back in the headlines this past week after announcing their retail sales forecast for 2021. And while NRF has traditionally been more bullish on the whole than other research firms regarding retail sales projections, the numbers in this release took us by surprise. Overall, the National Retail Federation is forecasting retail sales on the whole to exceed $4.33 trillion in 2021. And to put it in perspective, the $4.33 trillion is a ballpark estimate. They expect it to come anywhere between that number and $4.4 trillion. But they expect retail sales growth this year across the board of between 6.5 and 8.2% year over year. Reasons for this include the vaccine rollout expanding throughout the country and the buying public also seeking to return to some sense of pre-COVID normalcy while also not being able to maybe spend money as they typically would. Now, this is interesting because when you look at these numbers, very high numbers, general merchandisers and grocers are generally lapping their best year ever from last year. Apparel and mall-based retailers are just seeking to claw something back from last year. And perhaps the reason we're so surprised about this forecast is the fact that retail sales did go up 6.7% as a whole 1 year ago. And again, that's difficult to kind of wrap your mind around if you read the CNBC headlines and so forth saying that we're in the middle of a retail apocalypse. Again, retail trends might be shifting, but the retail industry as a whole had a great year last year if you exclude especially department stores and apparel retailers, and this would, in theory, be a tough act to follow. By the way, NRF's numbers suggest overall e-commerce channel sales only accounted for 21.9% of overall retail sales during last year, which would be below most expectations, including the expectations of the consumers themselves, as we've talked about some of that data by way of Deloitte and other research firms saying consumers suggesting that they might spend up to three quarters of their overall retail spend online. Now, NRF does see online touching sales jumping another 18 to 23% in 2021, bringing the expected piece of the pie just above 25% for e-commerce versus in-store retail sales. However, the reason for the overall bullishness on the part of NRF regarding expectations does have to do not only with the vaccine rollout, but the growth of the overall economy. They expect gains in the area of 220,000 to 300,000 jobs per month during 2021 as the economy begins to open back up to pre-COVID levels, particularly during the second and third quarters. Overall GDP growth is also expected to see substantial gains, according to NRF, up 4.5 to 6.0% over a year ago. Now, NRF chief economist Jack Kleinhens, a former guest of the show, noted that the expectations hinge on the effectiveness of not only the vaccine, but the distribution and projects the fastest economic growth for the U.S. in two decades coming out of the pandemic. Now, Kleinhans went further to detail several other macro factors that are expected to continue in 21 that portend, traditionally at least, high retail sales. So you've got high rates of consumer savings. Oftentimes, that parlays itself into retail spending after that crests. High stock valuations, increasing home prices. They continue to increase in most areas throughout the country. Government support. Of course, we've all heard about the stimulus checks and maybe further stimulus action coming up. And low interest rates. All of these things expected to not change much in 21. And additionally, you could see some consumers hesitant to return spending to services. Typically, about 70% of consumer spending is tied into services. And a lot of this will continue because you have services like, for example, automotive services, medical services. Those things aren't really optional in many cases. But Kleinhans did note that it was likely that spending opens up in that category towards the end of the year. Still, though, it's going to be a lengthy period of time before, let's just say, sports teams can play in front of a sold-out stadium or a music act can play in front of a sold-out amphitheater. And so, to this point, the major argument could be made that retail spending has benefited from spending moving away, of course, from restaurants and travel and entertainment. We've talked about those things, but it's likely that spending might be slow to come back to these categories. Obviously, you're looking at restaurants, travel probably bouncing back first. Entertainment's going to be the tough part because, again, you're looking at stadiums, you're looking at amphitheaters, probably not going to be able to be as crowded for a good period of time, therefore making tickets scarce to come by. Some people may spend more on the tickets as a result, but I think also you're going to see some hesitancy on the part of the public, at least, to jump back into those things. And certainly that's a positive for the retail industry. And the other thing, too, is that we should be mindful of what we've learned in the last year. And while this jump expected by the NRF does seem on its face to be pretty incredible and pretty impressive, pretty bullish, one could say, I think it's important to keep in mind how different things are at this stage of the pandemic than they were at the beginning of the pandemic. And sure, you can argue that, hey, we're on the way out of the pandemic, whatever you believe as far as the numbers are concerned, the vaccination is concerned. Really, it's about what governments have learned versus a year ago. You rewind back to last March, there were forced closures of many retailers deemed non-essential in March last year. But based on a lot of COVID metrics in the summer and during the fall, it's highly unlikely that these stores would have contributed much to the initial outbreak. We're seeing, I know in Colorado, they released the numbers, very, very few large cells, so to speak, of infections surrounding these types of retailers. And so as such, they've largely been allowed to stay open in most states and most counties where it is up to the county since last May or June. And so you look at last year where you had retailers closed for a good 2 to 3 months, of course those retailers are going to improve on last year's comps. Retailers like one I'll talk about here in a second, like TJX, for example, they have no choice but to improve over last year's second quarter comps. And so maybe that's also where some of that improvement is coming from. However, I do think eventually you're going to see that return to restaurant spend, and you might, as a result, see that decline in grocery store spend. But for the retail store landscape in general, as long as a certain percentage of spend is not going towards entertainment and is going towards retail instead, looks like we're going to continue to see a rather aggressive retail landscape. Now, a couple of other quick news notes. I wanted to talk about the NRF note to kind of lead off the show, but this week, Lowe's and TJX and several others in the retail industry, Foot Locker as well, released earnings. Lowe's, just to touch on them briefly, killed it once again. Comps were up 28.6%, which is crazy even by their pandemic standards. 19% of that was U.S. in-store growth, or they saw U.S. same-store sales in terms of their in-store sales grow 19%. E-commerce year-over-year grew 121% for them as well. So another home run quarter for Marvin Ellison and company over there at Lowe's. Meanwhile, TJX, when you look at them, they missed on analyst profit expectations coming in at 50 cents per share. And they were still profitable, but their fourth quarter open-only comp store sales were down 3% in aggregate. And according to the company, that beat their internal expectations. By the way, and this goes back to what I was talking about with what governments and local municipalities have learned. In the U.S., at least, all of TJX's stores were open during Q4. And obviously, that's a drastic change from last year's Q2, even though we see number of infections, number of hospitalizations higher than what it was last March or April. Of course, as the pandemic has gone on in many areas, there's been that learning curve there, and they're realizing, hey, these non-essential retailers, it's probably okay for them to stay open as long as they follow safety standards. However, the Cliff Notes takeaway from the call was that home goods in particular was up 12% in comps for the fourth quarter, and this continues what had been a great 2020 fiscal year. They continue to kill it. They were up 13% in comps for the year versus you look at Marmaxx US, which includes TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Sierra Trading Company. They were down in aggregate 7% over last year. So it goes back to the nesting phenomenon. It goes back to people maybe not spending as much on apparel. I'll be anxious to see what Sierra Trading does in this upcoming year because, again, a lot of their stores ended up, if not forced to close, closing by their own volition. I'm really anxious to see what they do during the spring because we saw a massive amount of people kind of flocking back towards the outdoors, which is, of course, the segment that they reside in, basically like a TJ Maxx, but for REI-type materials, if you want to think about it that way. Now, inventory was slightly down for TJX overall, $4.3 billion versus $4.9 billion last year, and I was curious because, you know, again, we talked on the show during the interview segment a couple of weeks ago about potentials for smaller orders on the behalf of apparel retailers maybe having a trickle-down effect for off-price stores. And it's apparent that that's not happening just yet. Inventory is down intentionally because especially of overseas closures. In fact, 63% of the overall days in Q4, their European stores in aggregate were closed. But they noted and they went out of their way on the call to note that product availability remains excellent across all categories. And this also pertains to home goods. They said there's no shortage of deals out there and they are excited about continued new product flow. Big for home goods because, again, you look at that category, very popular. You feel like a lot of first-line retailers are selling that merchandise. And, again, smaller orders for apparel retailers hasn't affected off-price stores, at least just yet. So I think that's a positive, certainly, to take out of the earnings call. Well, that'll do it for our news segment this week. Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Brittany Furrow, once again, VP of Sustainable Retailing and Healthy Living at Ahold Delhaize USA. She's going to join the show to talk not only about her role, but also recently released sustainability goals for the next 5 and 10 years for AD USA, and why it's important for grocers to set these goals and attain these goals. The answer might not be what first meets the eye. Ensuring the health of their customers and the sustainability of their operations has become a focal point for many retailers in recent years, especially in the grocery space. From hiring dietitians to onboarding advisors to assist in reduction of waste, grocers have taken many strides over the last 5 to 10 years. Joining us today to discuss how Ahold Delhaize's USA grocery banners have been addressing these issues and how they plan to increase their focus on sustainability in the coming years is Brittany Furrow, the VP of Sustainable Retailing and Healthy Living at AD USA. Ahold Delhaize USA also just this month announced their sustainability goals for the coming year. Brittany, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Trent. Thanks for having me.
First, I was wondering if you could give us a bit of an idea of what your role is at AD USA, because this is a role, it seems like, that might not have existed 20 years ago, but is pretty standard in the here and now.
Yeah, health and sustainability is a growth driver for our company. And so my role is really responsible for our long-term strategy in this space, including the goals that we recently announced. And I might just offer to not everyone is familiar with Ahold Delhaize USA as a name. And so just to offer, we serve 5 different brands across the East Coast that collectively were the largest grocery retail operation on the East Coast.
Listeners to the podcast, hopefully, we hope we've briefed them on Ahold Delhaize USA over the last few years. But yeah, if this is the first time you're tuning in, that's kind of the idea of the scope of the grocery operations. I wanted to turn again to this overall health and sustainability program at ADUSA. What are some of the broader initiatives featured within this program, and what are some of the broader things that you're attempting to do, as you say, to drive growth overall for the company?
Yeah, our strategy really focuses on four areas. The first, with being a food retailer, the first is around health and healthy living. That's core to our strategy. The second area is around greater transparency and understanding where your products come from and how they're made. The third area is around eliminating waste and really becoming an efficient operation. And that touches on kind of food waste and plastics. And then the last area is around climate action and really what is our role in helping the world to solve climate change.
All right, so let's turn our attention to this month's announcement now. This maps the direction kind of the next 5 years or so regarding this overall program. And I wanted to start with the health aspect of the announcement. What are some of the goals in this area, and how do you look to achieve them here over the next several years?
Yeah, well, it would probably help if I explain our Guiding Stars program. The first area that we're really focused on is trying to make healthy choices easy and convenient for customers. And there's a lot of claims in the marketplace around, what is healthy and what products should customers choose to meet their kind of personal nutrition goals. And Guiding Stars is a proprietary program that we have that evaluates every item that we sell and provides customers with front of pack labeling of items that are of nutritious quality. And so it makes it easy for customers to shop in our stores or to shop online and see, does a food product earn a nutrition standard? Does it earn a Guiding Star? And so that's our real focus area. And then in terms of our own products with private brands, our goal is to have 54% of our private brand assortment to meet a nutrition standard by 2025. And this is legacy work that we've had underway for years, but that's really what we're aiming for 2025, is to get our private brand assortment to be 54% of those sales to be from items that are healthy under our Guiding Stars program.
I wanted to follow up on this because I think it's interesting, of course. Obviously, I'm not a health expert, certainly by any means, but I know that people evaluate products differently as far as whether it's healthy, whether it's not. So I'm curious, if you get a new product that comes out on the shelves, how do you evaluate products to determine whether, let's say, they are welcomed into the Guiding Star program or part of it? And you mentioned a nutrition standard. How did you go about kind of developing those things?
Yeah, the federal government actually has nutrition guidance that's reevaluated every 5 years around just the nutrition density of foods and what people should be eating. And it's just a recommendation, though. It's not a requirement, right? And so what we've done is we've created a scientific advisory panel comprised of some of the best university public health policy professionals in the country, and have actually developed an algorithm where we intake information about every ingredient in the product, the entire nutrition label, which even for myself, even as a professional in this space, it can get kind of confusing. There's all these percentages and, daily intake, and then you can see the ingredient list, and what does all of that mean? And so our program, the proprietary nature of the program, is that we have an algorithm that follows the federal dietary guidelines and intakes all that information about every food product, processes it, and then determines whether an item earns a Guiding Star. And the way the program works is there are items that don't earn stars, right? Like I, every once in a while, like to splurge and have something indulgent. But items that are meeting the nutrition guidelines, they earn 1 star, 2 star, or 3 stars. The higher the star value, so 3 stars is the most nutritious choice. And we reevaluate every time the federal government updates their guidelines. Our scientific advisory panel reevaluates the algorithm. And the other thing I think is important too is the algorithm is transparent too. So it's publicly available. There's a white paper on it. Nutritionists and dietitians that you mentioned earlier, they have access to it. But the idea is that most of our customers just want something that's easy and makes it simple for them to make a choice when, we're all in a hurry and trying to get through the grocery store.
And certainly the star is going to be a little bit easier to read than metrics or algorithms would on the shelf as a shelf reader. And I was curious, if you don't mind, for those of our listeners that might be on the West Coast or in the Midwest, haven't been to one of your grocery store banners, once you walk into the store, how do you know which products have which level of guiding stars?
Yeah, so for our private brand products, the guiding stars rating is on pack. So you would see it labeled on the front of the package. And it's also on all of our shelf tags. So all of the shelf tags where you'd also be looking for the price, that's where you can also find whether or not a product earns guiding stars. And then I'd also say it's available digitally too. So if you're shopping us on any of our e-commerce websites, that's where you can find guiding stars ratings. And in the future too, you'll be able to scan products in the store on your mobile device and get even more information. Let's say you like the convenience of the easy, quick label. Does it earn a 1, 2, or 3 star? But maybe you want to know why. So you could scan a product on a mobile device while in the shopping experience and understand why. And again, Trent, not to ask people to digest the algorithm, but it would give you kind of like, why does this item earn more or less stars?
Absolutely. It's a circumstance where if people want more information about the program, they can find it. And if not, you've at least got the stars there graphically, certainly. I did want to shift gears. You know, a big topic in the grocery space over the last several years has been transparency, not only as far as we've talked about ingredients and inputs, but also how and where items are sourced as well. What are some key initiatives ADE USA is seeking to implement as far as driving home product transparency for customers, and again, making that information available when customers want it?
Yeah, this is the second area of our strategy, and I think it's one more and more customers are caring about. So we're seeing within our own customer data, actually, that even after the pandemic, customers want to know more about where their food's coming from and how is it made. And I would say the first area that we're focused on is helping customers understand where their food comes from. And we're really starting in our fresh business. So we have some big ambitions around 2025 and helping customers understand more about origin and, you know, exactly which farms their produce and meat, for example, are coming from. That's something we're hearing they want to know. And then for private brand items that we're responsible for, we're continuing, I would say, a good history of work here around sustainably sourcing and having sustainably certified products. So a lot of key commodities where customers kind of prioritize sustainability type of topics like seafood, coffee, cocoa, palm oil, pulp and paper products, our goals are to have those 100% sustainably certified by 2025. And those are things we have line of sight to and will likely accomplish ahead of time. But there's other topics too, like animal welfare and human rights, where we're starting to take some key steps and kind of the industry collectively is advancing there. And we want to really make sure that we have strong policies in place and are procuring products that our customers can trust in. So that's kind of the first step, is just kind of knowing where your food comes from. And then, you know, can we have the food certified and have chain of custody certification and provide customers with that level of assurance? But I would actually suggest that that's kind of the expectation. Where we really want to lead is actually in the customer experience and enabling customers to shop based on their values. And so it's similar to guiding stars. So I won't try to make us go back through that kind of detail, but guiding stars is based on health and nutrition. What we're focused on transparency around products is also on values around environmental and social issues that a customer might care about. So if you're following, you know, topics or have an interest in plastics and recyclability and the treatment of animals and or there's chemicals that you're concerned about, as a customer, we want you to be, you know, to have that transparency and be able to shop based on your values and your preferences. And so that's our other big commitment around transparency is we partnered with a company called How Good. It's a third-party company that evaluates the environmental and social impact of all of the products that we sell. And so our customers today can, similar to the rating system of guiding stars, this a customer would experience as a LEAF rating. And so you earn 1, 2, or 3 LEAF on how sustainable a product is. And this also enables customers to shop based on specific topics and values that they care about. So in our digital shopping experience, if you want to sort and filter and tell us that you care about the treatment of animals, or you want less plastics, or you're concerned about certain chemicals, our customers now have the ability to do that. And we just launched that this month. And that, I think, is what's really unique and different for us in the retail industry. Again, I go back to knowing where your products come from and having sustainability certifications is work we're proud of, but I'd say it's expected these days. And the partnership with HowGood, I think, is unique, and I'm very hopeful that our customers will enjoy it.
You mentioned customers being able to toggle maybe less plastics or less waste as one aspect of how they can sort products. And I know elimination of not only food waste, but also single-use plastics is a big undertaking, especially when it comes to private label product lines. I was wondering what initiatives you had planned around that elimination of single-use plastics and ensuring either reusable or recyclable packaging when possible for customers.
Yeah, eliminating waste is, I think it's part of every retailer's DNA, but I'd like to think we're leading in this space. And I'd actually start with food waste, if you don't mind, Trent, because it's, you know, food being the core of our business and feeding people being so important to what we care about. Our goals around food waste are to basically cut food waste in half by the year 2030. And we're not waiting until 2030. We have goals to get to 32% food waste reduction by 2025. And we're innovating and making a lot of investments in supply chain and technologies that help us with better forecasting and kind of getting food from the farms through our distribution centers and to the stores as efficiently as possible so that it stays, you know, fresh and our customers can enjoy it and it doesn't become wasted. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there is going to be some food that we can help bring to communities too through food bank partnerships and our affiliation with Feeding America. So that's core. We've been working on that for years and we'll continue that work through 2030, as I mentioned. But plastics, Trent, I think it tends to be the new area of focus. And we're definitely taking this on. Overall, what we're aiming to do is to reduce problematic single-use plastics that ends up in landfills or ends up in oceans. A lot of this has to do with, you know, packaging of food and retail products. The goal specifically that we're focused on is having 100% of our private brand products' plastic packaging to be reusable, recyclable, or compostable by 2025. And then we're also focused on increasing the recycled content of that packaging by 25% by 2025. And I would just highlight that plastics and changing packaging is, it's a systemic issue facing the industry. There's several companies working on it, and I think we're proud to participate in a couple of key partnerships. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation has a New Plastics Economy Global Commitment that we joined. We also recently joined the Beyond the Bag Initiative, if you think about all the plastic bags in retail. And so we have specific goals as a company that we aim to hit and we take very seriously. But we also recognize there's a need to kind of work together as an industry. And those particular partnerships are quite helpful at advancing how our industry tackles the plastics issue.
If you don't mind, I did want to backtrack to the food waste portion of your answer there. Looking from the outside in, what are some areas in which you might see increased food waste you're trying to address in terms of that food waste that maybe someone that doesn't work grocery on the day-to-day wouldn't realize that that's a particular pain point for you?
I think the biggest opportunity, the particular pain point I think with food waste is, I kind of mentioned, we're investing in technologies and supply chain to try to get food from the farm through our distribution center, through our supply chain, into our stores and have it stay fresh for our customers. Eventually, we start to discount food and start to mark it down as food loses days of freshness. And I think that the pain point facing the industry broadly is that most markdowns are done manually. And so if there's an associate in the store, and we're following protocols and we start discounting food with the idea that it goes on sale and customers, you know, will buy it and it'll get eaten and consumed the way it was supposed to be before it becomes food waste. The flip side of that is actually some great innovation opportunity. So one of our brands, actually, the Giant Company, just partnered with an organization called Flash Food, where we now have customers that Flash Food, it's a third-party app. So the Giant Company is based out of Pennsylvania, but if we had customers in that operating geography on the Flash Food app, they can receive notifications. And so we're starting to digitize and put into the digital space food markdown programs. And so if we've got, let's say, you know, a package of berries and, you know, they're reaching the kind of sell-by date and we want to start discounting them, we push notifications through the Flash Food app to let customers know, hey, we've got berries that are on sale now. If you want to come to the store and pick them up, you can get a great deal and we don't have to waste these berries. So it's things like that where really I think technology and innovation is, there's just so much potential to kind of course correct some of those pain points that we have been dealing with that have contributed to the food waste challenges that we have to tackle as an industry. But I think technology and mobile engagement with our customers is going to better connect customers to the days of freshness of the food and discount and markdown programs that we can offer.
So really fascinating partnership there as it pertains to markdowns, letting customers know that those markdowns are in store, giving them a reason also to go to the store. And on that note, I wanted to tie kind of a bow on our conversation here today. We talked in the very beginning that it was important because ADUSA sees not only crafting sustainability goals as vital to the organization's health long term, but also as a growth driver for the company. Why is it so important for customers in this day and age to see these sustainability goals in action? And how can this be a growth driver for ADUSA going forward the next 5 years?
Yeah, I would start with our customers. And I mentioned earlier, but some of the research that we've done with our customers, we've seen this as a trend that's coming for quite some time now. But even in the year of 2020 and kind of how vital retail stores and specifically grocery and food stores were for consumers and communities, 43% of our customers are telling us that health and sustainability is extremely important. So we're seeing that in our customer data in a very different way than it's been expressed previously. And again, I go back to, I think the pandemic just really reinforces people's values and their concern and care for living a lifestyle that's healthy and trusted and that they can have confidence in. And so it's really important to our customers. That's why we stay focused on it. I would say our company is also very focused on that, supporting healthy lifestyle and healthy people also supports a healthy planet. And when we think about the longevity of the food industry and sustainable consumption and sustainable and regenerative agriculture, we have to earn our right to stay in business and support a healthy planet that can continue to grow and foster and feed a food system that supports our business model and ultimately our customers and our associates. So it is one of the top growth drivers for us as a company when we think about our long-term strategy and the recent goals that we announced. That's not the end all be all. That's what we're focused on, but there's more to come. And it actually brings a lot of energy to a retail business that's focused on quarterly results and earnings projections and those types of things. And to look at health and sustainability and what's going on with our communities, people, and planet on time horizons that are challenging to think about 10, 20 years out. But that's what we think we need to do. And that's what we're really committed to.
Very well put. Brittany Furrow, once again, VP of Sustainable Retailing and Healthy Living at Ahold Delhaize USA. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. It's been great.
No, again, Trent, thanks for having me personally, and thanks for having us. It was enjoyable.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Brittany for joining us. It's always great to be joined by a VP at such a powerful retail grocery institution in the U.S. And certainly, we wish them the best in terms of meeting those sustainability goals as they continue to grow throughout the next few years. Now, our Looking Ahead segment, I wanted to turn our attention to a recently released partnership, a recently announced partnership between Verizon Business and Deloitte. They unveiled this month a 5G and also Mobile Edge Computing, or MEC for short, retail industry digital platform. And while that sounds like basically just a bunch of words smashed together, I do think that this in particular has the capability to be certainly a powerful tool for retailers, but also transformative to retailers. And for example, one of the uses in this basically collaboration between the two companies is to turn this intelligence to address out of stocks on the shelf. Basically, this platform generates automated replenishment notifications through cameras, again, through 5G in-store networks, to in-store associates to refill shelves that might have gone empty. Also would go so far as to alert DCs as far as allocation of additional inventory. Now, we've talked on the show before about how inventory and inventory tracking and ordering out of stocks has changed completely. But overall, this system involves a number of cameras and sensor-based analytics. And obviously with 5G technology, this could well be a game changer for a number of retailers. And the reason I'm looking ahead to it is you don't want it to become a case of the haves and the have-nots where maybe independent retailers don't have access to this type of technology, but it seems as though the technology is becoming more efficient, more inexpensive, and I'm anxious to see which retailers take advantage of this to increase their efficiency, whether they see a return on investment from investment in such technology, or whether they develop in-house technologies perhaps that also assist. But you look at Deloitte, obviously a data and research powerhouse. You look at Verizon, one of the leaders in the field in 5G. And so I think this is an intriguing partnership and one that is worth watching because it could have a distinct benefit on the retailers that choose to use them. Now, that being said, we'll wait and see if any retailers publicly announce the use of this platform. But I think it's valuable just to keep in mind that this technology did get rolled out this last month, at least in non-pilot format, and I think it'll be encouraging to watch over the next few years as it develops and see what other 5G-related partnerships retailers strike. Well, that'll do it for me and us on the podcast for this week. Once again, we thank Brittany Furl for joining us. Coming up next week, excited about this because we'll be joined by Howard Meetner. He was the first CEO, actually, of Sephora USA. He's going to join us to discuss not only growth of Sephora USA, but also he's going to talk about the ever-changing mall landscape from the perspective of a retailer that was in a number of shopping malls, certainly. And he's one of several interviewees that we have lined up over the next few weeks, including Brittany today, that super excited about. In fact, the week afterwards, we're going to talk to one of the last Blockbuster franchisees about where things went wrong at Blockbuster and about their new book. So super excited over the next couple of weeks. We certainly hope that you mash that subscribe button so these podcasts will come directly to your device, and we'll be back with you 7 days from now.
Been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.